This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Thanks so much for joining us on this gorgeous Saturday afternoon. John Hansen here. The number, 312-981-7200. You can call in or text in any questions you have. We'll try and get some of them answered throughout the show today. We'll take you right up till 5 o'clock. All right, one of the big stories this week, and Anna DeVlantis did such a great interview with the former governor, Rob Blagojevich. He went to the federal courthouse where, of course, he was convicted of many years ago. And he says that he now wants to sue a violation of his rights to be able to run for office. Does that argument hold any water? Let's put aside whether you would want to vote for Blago again or not. And let's just talk about the arguments, the legal arguments. And for that, we turn to Bert Odelson, always a great guest from Odelson, Sterk, Murphy, Frazier, and McGrath. Thanks for joining us here today, Mr. Odelson.
Hi, John. How are you today?
Oh, doing very good. You know, anytime we talk about Blago, I wonder how much air to give him out of my own breath, right? Because, but you know, it's an interesting legal argument, but it seems to me, at least that's what I'm reading from the experts, that his argument that he should be able to run for office again where he's able to, or where he's currently not allowed to, it doesn't really hold too much water. Before we jump into it, do you mind recapping just a little bit of what right now he could or couldn't run for office if he wanted to?
Yeah, sure. He can run for president in the United States.
Right.
He can run for congressman, United States senator. He can run for a federal office. And remember, he was a congressman at one time, prior to running for governor. So the federal law doesn't prohibit him from running for a federal office. What does present a problem to him, I guess, is running for a state office, and I'm sure we're going to get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
But he faces the problem that I think Mr. Cuomo in New York will face, and maybe we can talk about that in a little bit too. So that's the long and short of it right now, because of his conviction. And because our Constitution allows the legislative branch of government, the General Assembly, to impeach and remove him from office, they also allow him themselves to disqualify him from holding future office. So because the Constitution says that, because the Senate voted 59-0 to bar him from future office, he cannot hold office in this state other than the federal offices.
Just to clarify it, because I know that the Senate, immediately after they impeached him by the same 59-0 vote, they took that secondary vote saying you can't hold office here for state office. Okay, but does his federal conviction add another layer to it, or does that have nothing to do with it, or is that just one more hurdle he'd have to reach to try and be able to run again?
Yeah, it is another hurdle. That's a good point, John. It is another hurdle. There is prohibition to running for municipal office, like a mayor, like an alderman. If you have a conviction of an infamous crime, and his crimes are infamous, a conspiracy to commit wire or mail fraud is a felony, of course. So he would have to overcome that. And the only way there's two ways to overcome that. The president pardons you. Or you get what's called a restoration of rights from the governor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a long road for him.
Yeah,
he has to get over the impeachment proceedings that is not sustainable.
And
that,
I imagine
that is when he can't get over.
Some listeners might be saying, "Well, wait, he was pardoned, but no, he was commuted, and those two things are different."
Oh, way different. He was given an executive grant of clemency signed by President Trump, but it specifically says in the executive grant, one, he owes a $20,000 fine, which I have no knowledge whether he's paid or not paid, and that all components of the sentence stand. He is just he doesn't have to serve 14 years. He served 8 years. That's what the clemency did.
Going back to the impeachment, he argues that he didn't have a due process. It's interesting, though, because, I mean, impeachment is a legal proceeding, but it's more a political proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and Jim Durkin, the former assistant state prosecutor who leads the GOP caucus in the House, he says this complaint is not worth the paper it's printed on. What's your take?
Yeah, he's Jim is right. Jim is a friend of mine. Actually, I swore him in 1995 when he took his seat, and he is absolutely right. This complaint will fall on a motion to dismiss for numerous reasons. Numerous. It's almost juvenile, to tell you the truth. And all it is a big publicity grab by Blago, which he's pretty good at. And
we're talking about it.
Yeah, we're talking about it. That's correct. And it's in the news, and he'll be talking about it. But it really isn't worth the paper it's written on. And it's almost, when I read it, it's almost comical to lawyers who do civil rights, you know, litigation in federal courts, which we do.
One interesting aspect of it is that the idea that he brought it for himself, on behalf of himself, and he says that, look, people deserve the right to be able to make that decision. They deserve the right to be able to make, to vote for me. But the case doesn't have much standing because it's not like he got potential voters together as part of his case. He almost he doesn't have standing in the first part.
You got it. You sound like a lawyer, John. He doesn't have standing. And he names no voters as to who would be harmed, and he has no right to run for office. It's not, running for office is not a fundamental right like voting. It's a privilege, and every state controls how to regulate their elections and who can run for office and what their qualifications are going to be. So he was not denied any rights, and if you go back to the proceedings, there's a House resolution which the House passed when just prior to impeachment, saying that they gave him every opportunity to bring in witnesses to testify, and he refused. Every time he was asked, he refused to proceed there, and the only time he appeared was in the waning hours of the Senate trial, and when he appeared at the Senate trial, all he did is make a political speech at the end, you know, right before they convicted him. So even though he's not entitled to due process, because this is a political process and not a judicial legal process, they gave him his due process. He just refused to take it.
I kind of feel bad for him. He had no voters signing up with him on the case. I hear he's been jogging up and down Ravenswood on the northwest side. Just grab some of your neighbors. I don't know if anyone would want to put their name to it. But yeah.
Who wants to put their name to that? Are you kidding me? No. He just doesn't understand the system, which goes way back to when he first started practicing law, is an interesting other story, because his father-in-law, Dick Mello, was a client of mine when Dick was an alderman, and Dick asked me to represent him, which I did. And the funny part of that, and I can say it now, I'm sure Dick wouldn't mind, is when Dick called me to meet him, he said, I want you to meet my son-in-law. You wouldn't get him to represent you at traffic court, but he's going to be the next governor. So you got to represent him. I mean, those are interesting words, and which proved to be true.
Yeah. Right. Wow.
Real true.
By the way,
yeah.
I want to just guide everyone. If you missed the interview that Anna DeVellantes did with Governor Blagojevich, go to WGNRadio.com. You can certainly hear it there. Really interesting stuff. All right, Bert, let's shift gears to another.
Yes.
It looks like it's headed this way in Albany, an impeachment proceeding against the governor, Andrew Cuomo. We don't have to get into all the nitty gritty of the details. They're definitely not appropriate and horrific. I know a lot of people calling for the governor's impeachment. And it looks like they may have the votes. I don't know how things work in Albany compared to Springfield, but what do you see on the horizon here for Governor Cuomo?
Yeah, I'm really good. I'm really glad you gave me the opportunity to talk about this, because I went to the books and took a look, too. I was curious on how New York operates, and they operate strikingly similar to the way we operate in Illinois, and their constitution mirrors ours. It's a little more in depth, but it's the same process, John. It goes first to the assembly. They have assemblymen, and which are our state reps. So their assembly is their house, and their 150 members there, by a majority, can do articles of impeachment. So they only need 76 votes to impeach him. Then it moves over to their state senate, just like ours. Where they need two-thirds of the senators and different from us, the seven judges of their Court of Appeals also sit with the senators.
Oh, wow.
It's really interesting. I didn't know that. Their Court of Appeals, by the way, is similar to our Supreme Court. So their court, seven judges who sit on the Court of Appeals sit with the senators, and which are 70 total people, to decide whether the articles of impeachment should be sustained or not. One other interesting thing, the majority leader of the Senate in New York does not vote. She cannot vote, so it brings it down to 62 senators plus seven judges, which is 69, which means they need two-thirds or 46 to convict. She does not vote because in New York, not like Illinois, but New York, if the assembly, which is their house, votes to impeach him, he immediately leaves office on a temporary basis. The lieutenant governor moves up as the acting governor. And if the Senate convicts him, the Senate majority leader becomes the acting lieutenant governor. So because she has an interest, if the Senate convicts, she does not, she would not partake. So that's where it's different than ours. They have seven judges amongst the elected senators. Yeah, and they only need 46 to convict.
I need a Tylenol to get through all that math, Bert.
Nah, Dad. I already did it.
You did it for me. Thanks.
It's called arithmetic, John. It's pretty basic.
That's great. Hey, Bert, I got to put you on hold. We got the news coming up, but we'll continue this conversation. Also, talk about masks in schools. That sound good?
Oh, yeah, sure.
All right, Bert Oldison. Yeah, plenty more with him coming up. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. I'm John Hanson. Thanks so much for joining us here today, picking up our conversation from before the news about Governor Cuomo and the potential for impeachment that he's facing, let alone criminal charges. We'll get to those in a bit. But first, Bert Oldison, you had a couple more points about Cuomo and the impeachment process, right?
Yeah, and it's tied really directly to Blago too. Blago saying in his lawsuit that the General Assembly, our General Assembly, doesn't have the right to disqualify him from further public service. New York has the same provision in their constitution, same exact words. So I would anticipate if they have articles of impeachment on Cuomo, they're also going to add the provision as to not allow him to have any other public service similar to Blago in New York.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing, which kind of ties to what he's accused of, is the New York Constitution, similar to the Illinois Constitution, similar to the United States Constitution, does not define what an impeachable offense is. And you'll remember during the Trump thing, you know, what did he do? Is it treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors? And that's from the federal constitution. So they're going to have a hard time. By they, I mean the assembly in New York and the Senate specifying what the crime is that he can be impeached for. And what the funny thing about this, John, is that I think they may go back to a 1964 case in the United States Supreme Court. It's a very famous case where the definition of obscenity and pornography was discussed in relation to freedom of expression and freedom of speech. And of course, you've heard this before, but Justice Potter Stewart said, "I can't use words to describe pornography, but I know it when I see it." Huh. So you know, it's this kind of is similar to the Cuomo situation. I kind of know it when I see it, and we'll see how that pans out. It's going to be very interesting in New York
for sure. Hey, coming back locally, we've gone back and forth, I feel like, with the CDC and their recommendations. I understand why people are confused and upset. I also understand that science changes, and this is a very moving target with this pandemic. So I get why people are upset. I get why some people say, hey, do what the CDC says. Well, the governor has now said that he's going to line up Illinois schools with what the CDC says and require masks for all students, preschool through high school. And that's obviously caused quite a kerfuffle with a lot of people. From a legal standpoint, is his authority vested in this emergency authorization that he's extended 19 times? And Can villages or schools, municipalities challenge this or just defy it?
Yeah, that's a burning question, and I have been on the phone once or twice a week for the last 4 weeks with the superintendents that we represent. We do a lot of representation of high schools and elementary schools as well as municipalities. Before he came out with his edict that you have to wear masks, it was just a recommendation from the CDC, strongly recommended. They used what we call permissive words, not mandatory words. So we at the schools, quite frankly, didn't exactly know what to do, but now he cleared it up for us, gave us the mandate, no question that our teachers, our students, everybody will have to wear masks. Can it be challenged? The answer is yes, and it has been challenged in some of the southern states. I believe it's Arkansas, where the court has enjoined the governor's order there regarding masks and has said you can't tell a municipal entity or a school district to mandate masks. So can it be challenged? The answer is yes. Will it be challenged in Illinois? To be determined. But my school districts, we're going to be uniform, and we're going to mandate the wearing of masks, which, of course, bring us to the next issue. What if a student doesn't?
Right.
What if a teacher doesn't? You know, we then become the mask police. And that's really not our function in schools. We're supposed to be there educating and keeping the kids safe. So I think you'll see that on the legal horizon quicker than you'll see a challenge against the mandate itself.
Yeah, like, and I don't want to, I'm sure we've talked about it plenty on WGN Radio about whether or not this should exist or not or whatever to ad nauseum, but they're important discussions to have. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to have that debate right now. But my curiosity, just from a legal perspective, and I imagine you play this out in your head too, if it's a superintendent or a teacher, let's say, or a principal, whatever it is, says, I don't care, don't wear your masks. First of all, you have to find someone that is like, oh, wait, this is happening. Let's make news out of this. I mean, what could the governor do? Could he order the state National Guard in to put masks on? Like, could he forcibly remove kids from classes? Like, how would that play out? I mean, I'm sure it won't ever get to that point, but it's a fascinating, you know, to play it in your head.
It won't get to that point because the local school districts have discretion as to what to do themselves, which is what we were playing with before he gave this mandate. It's our local, our meaning the high school district's local discretion as to what to do. And I think what will happen is if the mandate is not adhered to, the school district itself will move to either take the student out of class and suspend him or expel him, or fire the teacher or lay the teacher off and for the safety of the rest of the population. So it's going to come down to local control and not the governor moving in.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what happens. I imagine we'll see these stories popping up as the fall progresses.
Oh,
now, hopefully the Delta variant eases and more vaccines are distributed, and maybe it's a problem that exists for a couple weeks and then we can move on from it. That's, I guess, the wishful thinking, Bert.
It is wishful thinking. And the other, I just had this question yesterday with the mask mandate and with our school districts mandating it. What do we do with basketball?
Right. Sports.
Swimming. Sport. Well, outdoor sports, no problem. But indoor sports, do our basketball and volleyball players wear their mask? How about our swimmers? Is it like the Olympics? You wear your mask until the point when you jump in the pool and then you put it on? Don't know.
Yeah.
Open question, John.
Yeah.
I'll tell you in a week or two or so what we're going to do. But it's an open question now, evolving law.
Well, my dad was a football player. Both my brothers were collegiate football players. I wasn't. I was in the band. But I tell you what, masks are no fun if you got to play the clarinet. And
how about that?
I still help coach the speech team over at Downers Grove South High School. Woot, woot.
There you go.
And that's, I mean, like, there are a lot of activities. And, you know, the data shows that our students should be as involved in things as possible for their emotional growth. Boy, there's a lot of questions. And the bummer of it all is I think we thought in April and May we were done, right? And I know it's frustrating for everyone, but like, this is going to be a real wrestle for the superintendents and principals.
And you know what's coming. I mean, if you think about it, and you've seen some stories about it, is mandating the vaccine, which a lot of private employers are doing now.
Right.
It will evolve into the polio situation where the government steps in and says, hey, come on. People are getting sick and dying. Enough's enough. You got to be vaccinated.
And Bert, I wanted to ask you about that. And please feel free to say this isn't your area of expertise. But, you know, I know a lot of people have said that, you know, these mandated vaccinations are unconstitutional, or they're not, shouldn't be allowed because the FDA hasn't given full approval. Okay, fine. That's an argument to be made. It looks like we might have FDA making full approval of Pfizer. I imagine Moderna's not too far behind. Do schools have the legal standing to require these sorts of vaccines?
You know, that's another open question, and I do have the expertise to talk about it. And it, but I'm going to be a lawyer here and say I think we do.
Right.
Until we have a test case, we won't know. But my opinion is we do.
Yeah.
Because it involves the safety of the kids in the school, or the safety of the people who work in Village Hall, or the safety of the firefighters in the fire department, et cetera.
Yeah.
It involves public safety and health. So just like the polio vaccine, the public finally got tired of all the iron lungs and people who were dying and relented. And of course, we hardly hear about polio anymore.
Yeah,
thank God.
Thank goodness. Right.
I think we're going down that road. Is what I'm saying. Just going to take us a little longer to catch up here because of this. You have this once every 100 years, so it's just going to take us a little longer.
Yeah, hopefully, knock on wood, it's another 100 till the next one. So you and I, at least, Bert, won't have to deal with it. Bert, we appreciate your time here.
Probably not.
Hey, let's chat again soon,
John.
Okay?
All right. Thanks, John. Have a good afternoon.
Yeah, take care. It's Bert Odelson, who's a great guest from Odelson, Sterk, Murphy, Frazier, and McGrath. You can find out more and send him a note at www.osmfm.com. Okay, we're going to take a break here on Let's Get Legal in just a moment. But each show we've had since the show started about 5 weeks ago, I've been wanting to like play a game, and we kind of like have a little time at the end of it. Because look, we are going to look on this show at everything from a legal lens. We're going to take some smart analytics, but I really want to have some fun too. I mean, there's some crazy law stories out there. We'll play around with some of those at some point. There's some really interesting state laws that we can play and learn a little bit more about too. But I actually have a list of the 10 most famous TV lawyers. And, well, some of them are really easy. I'm going to name the lawyer, and I want a listener to have to match it to the show. Unfortunately, some of the lawyers are the name of the show, like Matlock. I think we know who that is. But 312-981-7200. You do not have to be an expert in law to play this game. 312-981-7200. If you think you know TV, or even if you don't and you just want to have a little fun, Iridian's going to play too. Maybe we can get Kessler on board in the newsroom as well. We're going to play a little if you know the lawyer and the TV show that he or she is from. Coming up next on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association.
WGN. Are you sick and tired of paying too much in property taxes? Hire attorney Fred Augustine. With the applicable tools to analyze hundreds of properties in your neighborhood, attorney Fred Augustine will provide you the greatest possible reduction to your property tax bill. And with no upfront fees, he only gets paid by a percentage of what he saves you. So there's nothing to lose. Log on to FightYourPropertyTaxes.com. Begin lowering your residential or commercial property taxes today. Go to FightYourPropertyTaxes.com.
There's an amazing supper club in Wisconsin Dells, Ish Nala, nestled among the pines and perched above the sandstone bluffs of Mirror Lake. The beauty, the history, the service, the food, the fun. Hi, this is Bob Prosser, owner of Ish Nala Supper Club in Wisconsin Dells. I have been a part of Ish Nala for 30 years, and I am so proud to continue the tradition that began in 1953. Why not enjoy a brandy old-fashioned in one of our bars, each with a spectacular view overlooking Mirror Lake, or just relax before or after dinner on one of our outdoor decks? Our Ish Nala chefs have prepared your favorites, 24-ounce ribeye, cold water lobster tails, North Atlantic salmon, and of course, Ish Nala's roast duck. Thank you for making Ish Nala Wisconsin's favorite supper club, where the only thing we overlook is Mirror Lake. I'm Bob Prosser, and I want to serve you.
Fun fact for you shoe lovers out there. At Waxberg's Walk Shop, you can find over 40 of the world's leading brands of stylishly comfortable shoes. Ron Waxberg and all of the sales professionals at Waxberg's Walk Shop take the time to listen and help guide you to the perfect fit every time. You sit and they fit. And right now at Waxberg's, you'll find summer markdowns on all sandals of 10 to 50%. Stylishly comfortable sandals, even for hard-to-fit feet. Learn more at Waxbergs.com or call 847-965-FEET.
If you're in HR, you're probably wearing a lot of hats. Recruiter, team builder, trainer, mediator, policymaker, and of course, paper pusher. But not anymore. Bamboo HR is the number one HR software for small and medium businesses. It manages all your employee data easily and automates countless tasks so you can focus on people, not paperwork. Bamboo HR frees you from spreadsheets so you can do your real job, creating a great place to work. If the data shuffle and paperwork mountain have you ready to hang up all your hats, you're ready for Bamboo. If you handle HR records and paperwork, Bamboo HR is a dream. Let us free up your time and put your days of pushing paperwork behind you so you can focus on the people and making your company a great place to work for everyone. Try PC Magazine's top pick for HR software free today. Just go to BambooHR.com/Chicago. This is a limited offer only available to radio listeners at BambooHR.com/Chicago. That's BambooHR.com/Chicago.